What up, metalheads? Metal.
Okay, so there's a story behind that. Yeah. Hey. Hey, what up, Fold? Did you miss us? You know you did. So, just to catch you up on a bunch of things, sorry we haven't posted since our Halloween episode, which was awesome, by the way. If you haven't heard our Halloween episode back in October 2023, yikes, take a listen to that. But this is now February 2024, and we've been trying to figure things out. You guys know I had a baby, got a new job. Striking this work-life balance thing is a little bit of a struggle as I'm working through transitions here. So it's a struggle, but we're moving forward. This is the second episode that I have edited out, but what I want to do is I want to release this one first because we owe it to Chris. It's been sitting in the pipeline for a long time. So, Chris, this one's for you. If you guys want to follow him, I'll link all of his stuff into the show notes there. As always, you know, help encourage us to get these out a little bit sooner. find us on Instagram at Among Wolves Pod, or just follow us there. Text us because you probably know us if you're listening. Hopefully, we're back. God bless you guys. We'll talk to you later. Bye.
So we're getting our new metalhead fans.
We got tagged in somebody's concert post because apparently there's a metal band out of Salt Lake named Among Wolves.
Yeah, they came up on my Spotify. Yeah.
But it's funny because I'm looking at this thing. It's like what were they? Balance of Terror or something?
I don't remember.
That was the name of their song?
One of the other bands.
It's one of the other bands. It's like three bands.
And they did a show over the weekend or something like that.
And they're like, Among Wolves, you guys really rock. And I was like, we really rock. Awesome. And then I was like, wait a second.
We don't rock.
Okay, whoa.
You rock. You rock my world, that's for sure.
Yeah. All right. You gonna introduce our guest?
Oh, hello. So as you know, I am Neil, and this is David, and we are your regular host of Among Wolves. And today we like to bring our friend Chris Aguilar. Or do you want to be Christopher Aguilar on this?
You can call me Chris.
Okay.
Yeah.
Or do you want to be anonymous?
Mr. Aguilar.
I should ask that.
Here.
No, I'm okay.
Okay. Real quick, we have our friend who's the star of the Chris Aguilar podcast,
Christopher Aguilar.
Oh, sorry, the Christopher Aguilar podcast, whose actually name is anonymous, and we won't.
I will blur his identity. You can't see his face. It's pixelated.
Distort his voice. Or another Simpsons reference where they use Steve Allen's voice instead.
Now, Witness X, would you please tell the court what you saw?
I'd be more than happy to. I saw Mr. Montone there seal the late Mr. Palacio in an oil drum and roll him off the pier.
I kill you!
Hey, caramba!
I think that's the way they need to do it, because you've watched like those news shows where there's the guy who's kind of like in the shadows, and then you can hear the voices all like all funky, right? Have you ever seen that like on news programs or whatnot?
Yeah,
like back in the day,
yeah. Or something. Yeah. Unsolved Mysteries,
like Unsolved Mysteries, stuff like that.
They'd be like, yeah,
that show used to scare me.
Yeah,
so
I saw spaceships, and the government won't show you what they are. Bro.
That's really now good.
But now I sound like Buffalo Bill. Was he a real big fat person?
All right, Chris, so tell us a little bit about yourself, your show, and what brings you to this show, and how'd you end up with a bunch of guys like us?
Well,
that's the weirdest way to frame that.
Yeah, I'm not good at conversation.
Well, actually, Neil and I, we met in young adult group at the church, and that's how we became friends.
That was a while ago.
That was a long time ago, probably 2010. And yeah, Neil's always been that guy that's super hilarious in my life and always gave me a place to just feel at home when I come back to church. And he's always so welcoming. And then we must have met when you started working at the church, right? That's how we met officially. And a bit about myself, I'm Chris. I was raised in Orange County, California by two wonderful Filipino parents, Maria and Carlito. Shout out to them. Can I do that? I can do that.
They're hardcore listeners.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll start listening.
Yeah. They'll listen to this one.
I didn't know
your
dad's name was Carlito. That's awesome.
Yeah, like Carlito's way. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I grew up performing. I was a child actor when I was a kid, and then I continued. I trained again for acting, and then I continued doing that as an adult as well. And then I became a mental health advocate recently, and because of that mental health advocacy, I wanted to start a podcast to talk about mental health and wellness. Mainly, I've been going out into the community with a play that I wrote to help break the stigma of mental illness called Stand, with a capital D on the end. And it's been a wild ride of meeting people in the mental health industry. And I've been able to touch people's lives with the play because it's mainly my experience with bipolar disorder. And yeah, and that's what brings me here with you, is that I would listen to the podcast Among Wolves earlier on. I remember
that's rough.
During them.
I still think our second episode is one of the best. Of course, that audio quality.
Oh, yeah.
I'll keep going.
Yeah. And I can't remember if that might have been also one of the podcasts that like encouraged me to start my own podcast. I can't quite remember if the timing was that way, yeah. But it definitely helped me like want to create my own podcast, which is called TCAS for short, TCAS, the Christopher Aguilar Show.
Oh, that's cool.
You know what's good too? Is like,
we don't have
like
a TCAS.
No.
We have an A&W root beer.
It's true.
What's funny too is like, he's like, oh yeah, I did a podcast too. And then I listened to it and he's like, got sponsors. And he's like, if you do this, you should go here. And here's how you record with these mics. And I'm like,
so basically you're here on our show and said, I can do way better than that.
No.
And he's also good because they're short. So he's in and out. Does it like meander on too long?
No, we meander.
Talking about Christmas or something.
Yeah. Or salad. or obscure family references that nobody gets.
All right.
Yeah, I keep it short for mine, just because I call them a TCAS fix, and it just I just want it to be a fix of mental health and wellness type of thing.
Nice,
that's what I want.
No, it's good because you need those podcasts that are like
short,
because like even if they're I used to listen to one where they just talk about movies or something for a little bit or a little short story for it. It was like 7 minutes, and I was like, these are cool.
Yeah,
you know, but if you can get your subject down and hit it real hard. I like that. Do you star in your play or do you just...
No, sometimes. I mean, okay. It's the character, the main character is very, very similar to my life story. So I have performed in it. When I first started, I didn't, because it was so close to my life story that I was too scared
too.
It was fresh and it was scary for me to act in it. So I got a couple of my friends to act the part for me. And then I eventually got the courage to be able to perform my own play. And when I did that, that was so cathartic. It was just like I was crying so much during it, and it was a performance at a mental health conference.
Wow.
It was intense. So
that's cool. That's like being like the motivational speaker.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. But you're like, I'm not gonna speak.
I'm gonna show. Yeah. Yeah. Like I speak for a living, essentially, right? And so I've been learning more and more as I've gotten older that sometimes the best way to get the point across is a story. I've been getting way into fiction. Like, I love fiction right now. And some of the stories that you can tell with fiction, I couldn't have told it better. I couldn't have got the point clearer across if I just told you flat out in the words and explained the metaphors and things like that. Like, this is why we talk about fairy tales and things like that on the shows quite often recently. because of that. Because, like, that, I think, more often than not, because it not only does it get the point across of what a talk would do, but it takes you on the ride. You experience it as the speaker would have put to craft the talk together, because now you are relating to one of the characters and you're growing and developing with the character, not just the whole overall point of what you're trying to say, which is cool. That's why I like storytelling. It's awesome. I'm not good at it, but
it's kind of like old science fiction where it's like, here's the parallels to today, like old Star Trek.
Well, yeah.
Where it's like, here's a story about racism, but we're not going to tell you it's racism. We're going to show you Frank Gorshin with half of his face white and the other half black.
That's my favorite Star Trek episode.
Oh, really?
This year, Last Battlefield or something like that?
Yeah. That'd be your Last Battlefield.
Yeah. Oh, my
goodness. It's the fact that he had such, and they're like, a great episode. Why do you hate that guy? You're both black and white faces. He's like, he's white on the left-hand side. And it's
isn't that so smart?
It's so smart, great.
The way they write that.
And you're like, what?
See? That's why I liked, for a while, there was a newer one that's, the guy who does Seth MacFarlane.
The Orville.
Oh, yeah. Orville. His was pretty good too, because he would do the same kind of stuff that you used to get, but he would do it with his little
quirks, right?
Yeah, his little comedy twist.
Quirks is a good way to put it.
Quirks
is
a good way to put it. So going back to the show, what is the capital D for on Stand? What is that?
Oh, so it was mainly a marketing ploy for me, but the meaning behind it, just because, what was that?
Clickbait.
A little bit.
No, just so he can copyright it. And he can't get sued by Stephen King and or R.E.M.
Oh, right, The Stand.
Because The Stand and The Stand, yeah. But they're right, The Stand.
This is just Stand. There's no The
Stand.
Yeah, Stand. I Stanley De La Cruz is the name of the main character. So it could be Stan D. You could most people say that when they see that. They're like, oh, Stan D is the name of your play? Yeah, that's fine.
I like that.
So yeah. Stanley De La Cruz is a name, but also bipolar depression. So it's like bipolar S and then D for depression. So S is not really for anything, but it could just be like polar opposites of that. But well, also the word stand is used in the play. So in a certain way. So that's also
I would have also thought of the fact of, is it a capital S and a capital D?
Yeah.
Because then it's like bipolar and you have capitals on both ends of the word. So it's on both polar opposites.
Yeah.
I came up with that just right now.
That was really good. That's good. I'm going to use that.
Okay. So. Use that in your
It's sort of like what I've been saying.
And that's for free. So
yeah.
You know what's funny about with Chris acting is like I knew you for, I don't know, a year or so and you were living out here and then you were going to move back to LA and I think you were going to stay with your brother.
Yeah.
And then you were talking about like, oh yeah, and then I'm going to go, you know, do some acting and stuff or whatever. But I thought you were like, gonna get into acting. I didn't realize you had a history of acting because you and I've never talked about that before.
Right.
So we've, you know, I've just known you as you. I don't even know if you had a job or whatnot. I had no idea. I just knew you at church and we've done, like, we went to Catholic Worker and we fed the poor that one time with that guy Steve who was like, do you remember that dude? Oh, there's pictures of it somewhere on Facebook.
Okay.
He was one of the homeless guys who came up, but he was just like all like, hey, what's up everybody? So he was telling me all that and I was like, oh, that's cool, you know, I hope you do well and stuff, you know, like. And then I'm watching like a Seinfeld episode and I'm reading the credits on IMDb and then there's like the kid in it and I'm like, I know this guy, wait. And I made the picture bigger and it was him. I was like, Lisa, get over here. You'll never believe who's in this episode.
Yeah, because you said you talked about it. You did a lot of acting as a kid, right? So what have you been in that people would know from the...
So Seinfeld is one. Star Trek Voyager did an episode of Star Trek.
My mom loves that show.
Oh, she does?
I've probably seen every single episode of that show. So I've probably seen you in there too.
Oh, that's so fun.
Yeah, now I feel bad because I watched the pilot and I'm like, yeah, I'll catch up to this.
My mom and I used to watch that together.
Voyager.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so great. Yeah. And then That's So Raven. I did an episode of That's So Raven. I know some people are Disney people.
We do a lot of
The Amanda Show. That was Nickelodeon. So I did The Amanda Show. What else did I do when I was a kid? Boston Public. This one TV show.
Oh, no. I liked Boston Legal.
Yeah.
But the same guy.
Yeah. Oh, same
the creator? David Chase.
David E. Kelly.
David E. Kelly. Yeah. I was combining. Oh, no. That's the Sopranos guy. Yeah. Sorry.
Those are like the main.
Okay.
Yeah, I did mainly television. Like I did like a random movie for like I did the first all Asian American cast for this cartoon, this animated movie called The Magic Pearl, and it was about an adventure of a brother and a sister with their grandmother or their popo, and they traveled to this distant land and it was an all Asian American cast and George Takei was one of the characters and I was talking with him in the movie, but we recorded our part separately. So I got to meet him later on at a Star Trek convention, but.
And you're like, hey, wasn't that the Pearl movie with you?
I know. I did mention that actually. I was like, we worked together, but we didn't work together. But then I asked him like, so I go, I want to work behind the scenes. Like I wanted to learn more about production side and stuff. And he's like, well, you have to go to LA.
Well, that was
good. Yeah.
He did. So I was like, well, then I will. So that was before we had met. That was when I was working in production, but yeah, in marketing, I worked in television marketing for E! Entertainment and Style Network at the time.
Wow. I liked E!
Yeah. Yeah. I liked E! As well. Like the behind the scenes, like they had the E! True Hollywood Stories.
Oh,
and,
man, I watched a lot of those.
That makes sense.
And I used to watch Coming Attractions because
Attractions. Yeah. Oh, my God, I totally forgot about that
series.
They
put previews on TV.
Yeah.
So you'd watch a half an hour of previews.
Yeah.
Which I was like, cable television. Watch this. Oh, it's so funny because the internet's like ruined all these things.
Yes.
And nowadays, I hate trailers because I feel like it gives away way too much of the movie. Right. So I don't watch, especially if it's a movie I'm going to see anyway.
Well, they do all those things now where they add scenes and they adjust scenes they add scenes that are never going to be in the film into the trailer.
Well, they've actually kind of done, I remember them doing things like that in the past where it was scenes cut and stuff. But yeah, you're right. They do things like that. And then there's other stuff like, did you remember the trailer for Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves? And
vaguely.
Okay. Well, the teaser trailer was literally like him pulling the bow back.
Yeah, I was
going
to say, Kevin Costner pulling a bow is all I can.
Yeah, that's what it was,
head.
Really. It was, pulled it back, and then what you did is you followed the arrow. Uh-huh. And what it really was this giant log. It was such a big arrow that they mounted the camera on and followed it through. You know, they probably did a slow crank to make it seem like it goes faster through the forest and then it hits the target. And that was the point of the trailer. It was like, whoa, you're following the arrow and all that stuff. And it was a real cool thing. Well, they did it for the trailer.
Yeah, that was never in the film.
Well, it was in the film, but it wasn't supposed to be in the film. Oh, but like, funny. I guess everybody loved it. So they put it in the film.
That's great.
Yeah. But yeah, there are things that they make. But like and then there's like the teaser trailer where they'll do stuff where it has nothing to do with the movie, but they just do it. So you go, whoa, because it's like next year.
Right.
Because I remember there was it was the Transformers movie preview. Where it's this whole thing about the Mars rover or something, and you're like, what is this? Is this going to be some weird space thing and maybe some kind of alien or I don't know, some lost astronaut thing? And all of a sudden, the Mars rover, they're like, here's the last bit of footage. And it's like a giant transformer going and smashing it. And you're like, and it's that, like coming in 2007. And it's like, that's like a year and a half from now.
I got to wait that long to see Peter Cullen in live action. Transformers?
Yeah, kind of. Well, you hear him in live action Transformers.
That's true.
I was so happy that it was Peter Cullen doing it, but I was so pissed that it wasn't Frank Welker doing Megatron. So I was like, this Transformers sucks. Also, I went to Comic-Con in 2005 and they literally had a 18-wheeler truck looking like Optimus Prime and the side of it said like Transformers 2007. And I'm like, that is literally 2 years from now. This is awesome. They're going to be a Transformers movie. Of course, there's a Transformers movie with barely any Transformers. So
I was going to say, like, the Megatron's voice was not the problem with that film. The only good Transformers movie that I've seen is the 1986
Transformers the movie. You got the
touch. Oh yeah, Leonard Nimoy's in it. Yeah. Orson Welles does the voice of
Orson Welles. Yeah, like Citizen Kane.
It's his last film.
It is his last film.
That's what's so bad. They reverb his voice so much.
Oh, it's great.
Yeah. Wow. And yeah, he's a planet that eats other planets.
Yeah.
Okay.
And who else is in it? And Judd Nelson's in it. And
Judd Nelson is in it.
Eric Breakfast Idol. Club,
right?
Yes.
Judd Nelson.
And Eric Idle is Rekgar. Who else would be the stunt casting they did?
Stunt.
Well, yeah, because like they had a bunch of like cartoon voice actors in it that did the Transformers series that kind of were in it. And then they had all these stars who were in it. Mm. And then, Robert Stack, the Unsolved Mysteries guy. So we're talking about he's Ultra Magnus. He was, you know, the Untouchables.
Oh, yes, he is.
That.
Yeah.
Man. Yeah.
Yeah, full circle.
But what? Yeah, exactly. That's what we call a callback. So But then what's funny is then when they had to do the next year of Transformers the cartoon, you're not getting Robin Stack back, so you got somebody else doing the voice.
Yeah,
like who did it? I'll have to look it up. But like then what's funny too is Frank Welker did. Who did Megatron's voice? Did Galvatron's voice? But he didn't try to do Leonard Nimoy's voice for the movie.
Right.
He did it more like a more crazier, like jestery kind of voice.
Because Leonard Nimoy played the bad guy.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so he did like a kind of voice. And it's like, so what they did is they said that he like fell in this lava and got crazy. So that's why his voice changed or something.
Kids wouldn't have noticed.
I noticed. I noticed all that stuff.
Of course he did.
Like when they had the bee.
The weird kids noticed.
Like when the bee from Honey Nut Cheerios changed the voice.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
Oh, whoa.
Yeah, so they had one from, you know, throughout like all the 80s, and then somewhere in like 1989 it had a different voice. And I'm like, what's wrong with the bee's voice? I'm also the one who said, hey, Donatello from the Ninja Turtles is the same voice as the Quick Rabbit.
Like from Nestle Quick?
So yeah, the Nestle Quick Rabbit was, he was voiced by Barry Gordon. Barry Gordon did Donatello, and he was, and then not until I was older, because I knew him as a voice actor, not until I was older did I know that he did like, he was like on the Jack Benny show and stuff like that. And I think he sang the hippopotamus for Christmas. Oh, no. He sang the Two Front Teeth. All
I was
going to
say, was that chick that sang the hippopotamus?
Yeah, sorry. He did the Two Front Teeth song. Yeah. And I'm like, what the heck? And then I also found out that the guys who did the Ninja Turtles, the Cam Clark, Rob Paulson, Barry Gordon, and what's the other guy's? Hounsen something.
Yeah.
This amazes me.
And they all would sing songs that were songs by the Turtles, the band the Turtles from the 60s.
Oh, that's great.
So like they'd sing Happy Together, but what's funny is they're the Ninja Turtles singing songs by the Turtles.
That is funny.
I think that's hilarious. Hilarious.
Yeah. Neil's got a lot of institutional knowledge.
Yeah.
He knows people and he knows places and things and those. And times and maps.
I'm decent with, geography.
Okay, here's the thing. I just finished reading The Hobbit again, and I could not, I didn't, this time reading it through, I counted or just kind of made a mental note and kind of a chuckle in my inner child. Every single time they mentioned that Bilbo Baggins loves maps, because they say it a lot. And I'm like, you know who else loves maps, Bilbo Baggins? Neil Whitney loves maps.
Do you want to know how much I like maps?
Oh, no. How much do you like maps?
And Lord of the Rings. Shortly after when the movies were coming out, at the Macaroni Grill, you know how they give you that big piece of white paper and you can draw on it with crayon? Uh-huh. Yeah. I drew a map of Middle Earth.
That's fantastic.
Did you keep it?
No, I didn't keep it. I literally was like, okay, here's your Shire, and here's Weathertop, and here's Rivendell, and here's your Misty Mountains, and here's where Moria would be, and here it comes out. Down here's the Gap of Isengard, and there you have Rohan, and down here is Gondor, but way over here is the Mirkwood Forest, and there's the Lonely Mountain, and down here is your Mountain of Shadows and your Ash Mountains, and behind that is the Land of Mordor, and here's the Black Gates there. And this is the Dead Marshes up here, and there's the waterfall that has a name. Starts with,
I don't remember.
I loved Thomas Guides.
I love Thomas Guides. I literally would stand there and flip the Thomas Guide and look at stuff, and then you'd find roads like Mulholland, and you're like, how far does this road go? And then you flip, and you're like, oh my god, it like goes way up to the reservoir or something, and you're,
Yep.
But yes, and Thomas Guides are kind of, it's an LA thing.
Gotcha. I was like, I don't know what a Thomas Guide is.
Oh, no. Okay.
Thomas Brothers.
Yeah, they made a map, like a book of the map of everywhere you go. And that's how my father would teach me how to go to auditions when we were in LA, is that he would give me the address for the audition, and then I'd have to look it up. You looked up in this index in the back of the Thomas Guide, and then it's like, okay, you have to go to E6 on page whatever. Mm-hmm. And then you go to that page, and then you can find it. Yeah. And then you decide how to get there, which is like how we used to do it.
And then the thing too is that would give you roughly the street it was on. And then you have to sit there, and then you look on the street, and they'd have the little address markers, 300, 500.
That's right.
And you'd have to use that to figure out how far away place you're auditioning on is. And then you have to, like you said, flip the pages to figure out this freeway so we can get back to the 55.
Yeah. That's pretty cool. It's just like an atlas.
Yeah,
like
it is.
Road atlas.
Like an atlas. It is a road atlas, but it's a giant thick one. Yeah. So in a sense, instead of like a folding map, it was literally pages. And the page from left to right, and then you'd flip, and it kept going. Your east to west was one set of, you'd flip it, and you could go all the way east to west. Then once you got to the edge of the county line, then you had to go all the way to the most farthest western part under the next one.
I have an escaped child.
So if you're going to go north-south, you'll have to flip 10 pages to get to the next one.
Yeah. I had one of those, but I don't think it was Thomas Brothers.
What was it for?
It was a roadmap, road atlas for the United States. It had almost all the states.
Then it's Rand McNally.
That's what I thought it was. But I was like, worried
about
that.
But it's this big, right?
It's huge.
Yeah. Those are the ones that are the full states, and it's state by state.
Those are cool.
And then they have the little picture on the side. That's where your metropolitan areas are.
And then you go to the
page
for the little picture.
Little picture on the side. Yeah. And like LA, for like LA County, they had a big one and stuff. Also, the great thing about the Thomas Brothers map is all the cities were different colors. So you always knew each city was a different color. Like West Covina used to be, was pink. Actually, we know what's funny. They had a Metro guide or something, which was like the poor man's Thomas guide. I have one in my office. I'll bring it. And what's cool is if we look at it, we'll be like, look at what's not there now.
Nobody's going to think it's cool to look at this map with you. You'd be like, look at this map of places that you've never been to, David.
Well, no, it's not what we haven't been to. It's what's not there because it's so old. It's from like 2004 or something.
And like, look at these roads. They're no longer closed now. It's all highway. I'm like, I don't know.
See the disappointment in my face.
I'm sorry, Neil.
I don't know how much this edit you're going to edit out now.
No, just how excited you got about a map with roads on it. I was like, David, you would have so much fun if we brought it. It's going to be so cool.
I'll bring it over. You can watch how the pages go.
You see, this road continues on the back of this page.
No, it's more like, look, Stephanie used to end here. Look, there's just a dirt road that's Anthem.
Yeah.
Shut up.
That was great. Okay. You want to talk more about maps, or you want to move on to another subject? Sorry, Neil.
This should be a video podcast right now, because then you can see my face.
You can see your face.
And the disdain.
And the disdain. Because
see, I can act. All right. You want to get in the big show?
Let's go. Let's go.
Oh, wow.
All right. So I know that you came on to talk about maps, but...
but now that we're done with that...
This is the segment of the show where we move on from maps. And talk about whatever's next.
Somebody probably thought that was interesting.
Oh, it's super interesting.
Terry Love thought it was interesting.
But
heavy metal people listening to this.
The heavy metal, heavy metal listeners.
They were like, I was into it because I wanted the metal, but.
But then when he started talking about maps, I was like, oh, I'm into this.
Like, he was totally breaking down, like, Civics installed.
In an audio medium, so you have to have a really good attention span to follow all the little roads and things like that if you've never seen them before, right?
I know, huh?
Usually you show that stuff.
And we get so Vegas-centric sometimes because I'm like, oh, and then we go to this place off the Sahara and it's this and this. And then it's like, you know, there's people listening in England. They're like, what the Sahara?
Yeah.
We do that. We do have English downloaders.
We do.
That's cool.
This is the... everybody coming to the show knows that, like, this is a Vegas show. Like, this we all are very, very clear about what we're doing here and who we're pandering to. Yeah. All the locals. Yeah.
Not even pandering to locals. We're just talking.
We're pandering to each other.
Yeah, we're pandering to my ego.
Now we're going to get a bunch of comments saying, more maps, more maps. All just, the pro-Neil. More maps.
Just to let you know, we don't get comments. We don't. So really, we don't know if people love us or hate us because they don't tell us either. So far, I don't know if I hate that or not because, like, you know how, like, if you write a book and then they're like, oh, they'll put it on Amazon. It's like, don't read the reviews because even if there's 50 ones that are, this book changed my life. And then someone's like, this guy's a hack. And then you're like, F that guy. Yeah. But there's 700 people who loved your book. And you're like, screw him. I bet that's what it would be. Yeah.
Yeah.
So if I made like YouTube videos and it's like, I couldn't read the comments because like my ego was way too
fragile.
All right. Don't say it like it's true.
So he can't ever see any of the comments. In truth, we get thousands of comments. Yeah. And I hide them all from him.
Oh, that's because we haven't got one good one. Oh, I like where David explains stuff. See, you can read this here.
Yeah. No, I'm the faith dictionary guy who's going to give you the black and white of what the church teaches on A, B, and C subject. And Neil brings the humanity, which is desperately needed. Because
like putting too much air in a balloon.
Yes.
Sorry. That's like a joke when they're making fun of Star Trek. Because they'd be like, how are we going to fight these guys up? Like, especially Next Generation. And then they'll be like, I'll do some techno babble and redo the warp core and blah, blah, blah.
Exactly.
And then somebody else be like, yeah, like, putting too much air in a balloon. It'll pop. Yep, exactly.
That's exactly it. Yep. Yeah. That's what Neil does.
Like, putting your tongue on an ice cube.
So this show is very, very bad without him. and it's off the rails without me. And so
that's why we never had an episode without him.
Yeah, yeah. I've actually tried to convince him to, because one of the shows we like to do is going out to the Diocesan Conference and interviewing people and talking to, because that's always fun to meet people from all over the place. And I try to convince him, because I can't go this year to do that, because I got other tasks to do with that particular one. I try to convince him to do it with somebody else, and he's like, no, I don't think I can.
So there's part of me that kind of wants to, then another part of me that's like, eh. Well, yeah. And then there's another part of me where I was like, oh, Lisa, I don't need to go. I'm going to stay home with you. I'm going to give up the diocesan conference for
David
you.
David said I could go, but...
David said he couldn't wait for me to go and record. Not that he's busy or anything. So...
Wow.
I turned him down to be with you, honey. That's what it was. That's good. That's a good move. That's smart. You should do that. Mm-hmm. All right, Chris.
No way she'll fall for that.
Now, I had texted saying, hey, I know we're going to have you on the show, and... what are we going to talk about? Like, what was the thing? I was like, because that's always the thing we always talk about is when we're going to have guests on the show. It's like, yeah, we should have so-and-so. I'm like, that'd be great. What are we going to talk about? I don't know.
Yeah.
And I also don't want to be that guy who's like, hey, you want to be on our show? Cool. Well, think of something cool and come on over.
I know. Yeah.
But you and I talked before a little bit.
Yeah. Oh, good.
Just very little.
Yeah. Good. So this was a text back. So I said, well, we have a topic for discussion. And you said, well, I've had thoughts of leaving the Catholic faith, and I was hoping you both could reel me back in. Was the...
Wow, just break it all there, dang.
Well, I'm just reading the thing.
Because before he was just saying, hey, I have spiritual problems, and, you know, we need to work things out. And I'm like, okay, we can go. And then it's like, yeah, I'm thinking of jumping ship, so...
Yeah. It was a little bit of a...
Oh, on the text, I was like, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Neil went all like, yes, podcasting gold. And that's all.
I hope you took that as
like
the joke.
Like Bob Cratchit or something.
I don't know. Yeah, I was trying to think of like, who are like people who are nice to people? And then I was like Jesus or Bob Cratchit. Or I should have thought, I was trying to think of somebody who's not as on par with Jesus.
Well, I think it was just the amount of lessons that I've learned from your podcast in regards to the Catholic faith and the church and everything. I knew I wanted to come on here because I have been facing my own challenges with just very basic thoughts that have come into my mind when I'm in the church and when I really can't make sense of it all, really. And so that's why I'm here, I think, because I wanted to make sense of certain things that I think I like about the church and then the things that I dislike about the church. And I want to be able to come to some sort of resolution for myself and understand like why I'm really there, because right now I'm just there because I want to be obedient to my mother. I mean, that's why I'm there. It's very obvious. I mean, for my mom and me, but I want to be there because I really believe like okay. That's why I'm here.
You were like even reading the other day too.
Well, cause I'm scheduled to lecture.
No, but I mean, have to sign up for that or did she sign you up?
No, I've always liked to read at church. I love the idea of being the vessel for people. So like not performing the reading, but actually just reading and understanding that people will perceive it their own way. And as long as you're not in the way of that, that you could be a true vessel for the word of God. Like that's always excited me. So that aspect of the church I've always liked.
That's pretty. I was.
I'm mature.
I know. You're on the wrong show.
Oh, jeez.
That was actually pretty good. Jeez.
No, but I'm ready to go deep if you guys...
Yeah, let's do it.
No, we can deep. We can deep.
We can deep. Yeah. We did a deep dive in maps. Let's go a deep dive into your face.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
He's going to keep it.
This is going to be the thing. Like, episode 400 of Among Wolves. Remember that time we talked about maps? Oh, no. I like how that's...
Just the show.
Making fun of me more for knowing about county and city lines than the fact that I drew Isengard.
Now, that's great. That's amazing.
On a macaroni grill thing. You should ask my sister. She'll be like, oh, yeah, that was a great day. Like,
okay, so where are you at spiritually? So you said you're struggling with faith in some basic things, or like let's start there because we're pretty basic. So
are we talking about relationships?
I'm not sure
with God or
let's see.
Or is it the institution?
I think that the basic parts of that. So like just that. Okay, I guess I really have to own my thoughts because I can only imagine there are some listeners that also have these thoughts, and right. I have to relate to that. I hope people can relate. Or I'm just some random that's thinking these things.
But don't have a lot of listeners, so you're not going to get a lot of people. But
no, I the institution. So it's getting harder for me to just listen to. I don't know. I can say this.
Of course you can. This is what the show's for.
No, if it's not, just we can edit. Just to. That's true.
Because there's like just two
to, just to have like the priest be the one that is leading everything during the mass. It's I think I have a gender issue, I think, in general.
Okay.
And because I went through a mode in my life where I was very gender fluid and I was wearing dresses and I remember talking to my priest when I was living in LA at the time, and I'm like, what if I just show up to mass in a dress? And he was a very open priest. Like I was very comfortable talking to him, and he's like, well, Chris, like I wouldn't have a problem, but you have to understand other people are going to have a problem with that. It's just going to be an issue. And I think then is when what stemmed my thoughts on like, wow, a man can like run this whole institution, and then just like there's a bunch of men in position of like the bishops and everything. And I guess it's hard for me to follow or believe in all the text that is from a long time ago. And but these are such basic thoughts, but I just, it's hard for me to give in. I don't know. Is it
the fact that it's a guy who's running things rather than guys and girls?
Maybe, I guess.
I had a similar conversation with this lady over at the parish a couple months ago now, because I've been working a new place. But she was interested in coming into the church, and she had kind of a very similar issue. She said, but I can't... she had a thing about men in power. I don't know if there's something in her past or whatever, but she had said, I can't imagine ever going to confession to a man. You know, he's just this guy, and he shouldn't have any power over me, and all this kind of stuff just kind of started pouring out of her. I mean, is that kind of like the visceral reaction you have to this idea of an all-male priesthood, or is it that visceral, or is it somewhere in between?
It's somewhere in between.
Okay.
Yeah, but this is the funny thing, because like even when I went to like one of those more universal churches, or like the Metro more the LGBTQ friendly churches, mm-hmm. like I didn't really feel it there either. So it's not like I needed a woman to be in power. Like it's not that. It's more like the traditions that are set are so set that I don't feel like I'm open or whatever. But a lot of these thoughts were before I was in the hospital again, because I was hospitalized again for mental health in November and December. So very recently was I hospitalized. And it was mainly because I decided to go off my medications. And then it was just, a bad news from there. And it felt like a prison. And when I was hospitalized the second time, this was my third hospitalization. Second time I was very much into my faith because I was with a woman actually. At the time, and we had a great relationship, and so I was really into my faith at the time. So I was counting on prayer to get me through that. This time it was such a prison like place, this hospital, that I sort of turned away from everything and just said, I have to get myself through this because no one is here with me, you know, and even though there are other patients there and the staff, but I mean, I was punched in the gut by one of the techs in the hospital.
But like literally?
Literally, yeah. And where I went to the doctor and got like possible rib fractures from that. And like, but I have so much empathy that I was like, he was just having a hard day or something like that.
Yeah, that's not okay.
That's not okay.
No, he just punched you? Like, he's like, this guy's getting on my nerves.
Well, but it was probably when I was being restrained because I barely remember this.
Oh, like.
So he probably was like trying to get me to.
Holding you down?
Yeah, he probably was just trying to. All right,
sorry.
Restrain
I totally
me.
Imagine that you're like sitting in the bed and you're like, boy, I'm going to be annoyed. He's like, you need to shut up.
Oh, wow. No, it wasn't quite that like random. I think it was a part. I barely remember because I was so out of control. My mind was so not there.
I can imagine like holding you down. But
yeah.
Sorry.
So
I don't know. Like Ben Stiller and like Billy Madison. He's like, sorry.
It's all good.
You're on labor. On rock breaking duty.
I guess I've reached a point where even my surrender to God is like so helpless. I don't know. It's like I would like to go to the church to feel saved and stuff, but I guess because of the traditions that are set, it's really hard for me to accept that that's where I belong, like where my faith belongs. And I struggle with that. And I'm continuing to struggle with that. And I don't know what to do.
So is it all traditions or just like some traditions?
Probably just some.
Okay.
Yeah, just some of the, because I there's some sacraments that I love, like, I mean, there's seven, right?
Yeah.
So there's a part of me that wants to have this really great educated discussion, right, about the Catholic faith, but there's also a part of me that's just like, I just want to believe again,
right?
And I love the rosary. I love every aspect of the rosary and that sort of, in that prayer. Mm-hmm. I mean, going to church every morning, doing live streaming.
Yeah.
For those who don't know, I work at the church live stream as well, so thanks to David. And
David.
Yeah, and I see the rosary being prayed, and I love that.
Are you enjoying going to mass daily rather than just a job, or like, or is it like, this is, I'm just doing this?
Yeah, I am just doing it as a job. And when I go to mass, when I'm lecturing, because I go to mass when I lecture, when I live stream, and then sometimes when I'm like, I go to the 7, I love the 7:30 mass because it's just like, well, because there's coffee and donuts after, but I also like it because it's just early and people are there early. I like that feeling.
There's no kids, not that many kids.
Is that when the 9, that's a 9:30, right? 9:30 is when.
Sorry, that's the one we would go to. No, I could imagine not going to the one we go to.
So, I just.
If you like church.
Yeah.
If I could maybe summarize what I'm hearing, it's like, okay, perhaps there was a time in your life that you really connected with your faith. And you said, this is real. God is here for me. I'm loved, I'm accepted, and you miss that. Does that sound fair?
Yes.
So you don't have that now, you feel? Or do you have that part with God being there and you don't feel like the church as the institution is there?
Right.
Those could be completely separate.
Is that a dichotomy for you? Is like the church, God over here and he's there for me, mm-hmm. but the church is over here and she's not.
Yeah, or is maybe they're both kind of half?
Yeah, because I feel accepted. I feel involved. I feel necessary. I feel with the church, with the institution.
Do you feel that with God, though?
Well, God to me is so bigger than I can ever imagine that I don't even know
Do you always think of God as the big this guy?
Yeah.
Or do you ever relate to him on a more...
Well, just even saying, like, relate to him. You know what I mean? That we have this. Right. No, it's okay.
Or, like, relating to Christ, let's say. Or Jesus, like, in God.
Oh, that's what I have. So, Jesus and Christ, like, just... Okay, just Jesus Christ, like, that this man had all these wonderful things, and then he got... I don't know. Like, I feel like it's the stories. I have a hard time believing the stories.
Okay. Oh, like the miracles and stuff?
Yeah. And all those things. Like the disciples followed.
My problem was more the Old Testament-y stuff.
Okay. I need to know more to talk about this stuff. That's why it's hard for me to get into the educated part of it. Okay. So I kind of want to stay with like just feelings, just like what we have. Cause that's what I wouldn't be able to talk to you about all this stuff that I just don't know. I just don't know.
Oh, no, I understand. I was just trying to, I'm just picking on your brain too a little bit.
Okay.
But like, cause I've had problems with those, with certain things or whatnot, where like the feelings are fine, but the head part wasn't fine, where it's like, you know, and then, you know, as you learn, like, what is it? Parts of Genesis and early chapters of it. It's like, it's kind of like
very allegorical. Like, so the first 11 chapters of Genesis particularly are extraordinarily allegorical, and the way they're written, like, you just take the first two chapters of Genesis. Yeah. Take the first two chapters of Genesis, for example. So
good. Yes, that's right. It's good to have you.
That's not for you. It's for our listeners.
Yeah. It's for other people. The first two chapters of Genesis, for example, in the first chapter of Genesis, you have the 6 days of creation and God resting on the seventh, right? And in that order of creation, you have God creating all of this stuff, right? He creates the light, and then in the third day, he creates something for the light to be held in, the sun. So like they correspond to, first day corresponds to the fourth day, the second day corresponds to the fifth day, the third day corresponds to the sixth day. It's like very poetic, right? But on the sixth day is when man is created, after all the things, to show that he's the pinnacle of the creation and all this set before him. But then the very next chapter, Genesis chapter 2, it starts with God, it retells creation, and God creates man first, and then he creates all the animals and all the other things, right?
So it's like it's a whole nother story.
Correct. It's a whole completely different story, and that's on purpose, because they're telling a deeper truth using a particular tool. See, I think we struggle with scripture, particularly when we don't understand the genre that we're reading.
Yeah, because wasn't those adapted from different other older texts too, probably?
It could have been.
Chapter one is from this, and chapter two is from this.
Well, chapter one's much later than chapter two. Chapter one is a priestly, well, depending on who you ask. Some people
say I'm also not saying it was written that way. I'm saying is that one's adapted this way and one's adapted that way from older things.
Right, right. So the priestly source of chapter one, it's a very liturgical movement, right? So that's the idea of chapter one versus chapter two as a Yahwehist source. Nobody cares about this but me. Like maps.
Just like mother.
This is my maps.
Got it.
But anyway, so that I think that a lot of that struggle is understanding what genre you're reading from. Now, all that being said, that doesn't change certain like historical realities. For example, Abraham. There's a great testament to the identity or the existence of a person, Abraham, who kind of branched off with a son, Ishmael, who had started his own thing, and Isaac, who kind of started his own thing, right? And so that's pretty well attested to. There's very few people that doubt that Abraham was a real person, right? So there are historicities about this, even if...
And those are in the later chapters.
That's chapter 12 and following, right? And so it really depends on, like, being able to recognize the genre that you're reading, and then... Yeah, just seeing where it goes from there. The Gospels are unique because the Gospels are they're not written allegorically, and they're not intended to. And that's what's really interesting about the Gospels, is because you take the Gospel for Luke, for example. The Gospel of Luke was written to a politician, essentially. And the whole purpose was to convince the Roman authorities that the Christians are not a threat, and also try to convert the Roman authorities, right? Mm-hmm. And so this is the essence of Luke's gospel here, is he doesn't need allegory. He doesn't need to put on his gospel is very much like whenever people tried to put a timeline of the gospels together, they're using Luke for the most part, because his timeline of the gospels moving into the church, it's pretty darn reliable. So much so that you can take Paul's letters, which Luke talks about in the Acts of the Apostles, which is a continuation. If you aren't familiar, Luke wrote wrote his gospel and the book of Acts as one book. That's the intended to be. It's just one continuous narrative. And the Paul's letters, which Luke talks about, you can go to Paul's letters were written by Paul's hands, and you can match up the timeline. So accurate, right? So this is what
like
Luke
side quests.
Yeah, like side quests. This is what Luke was doing, was he's putting that genre forth. Now, that gives us a bunch of stuff to wrestle with, because even if you want to do like the most reductionist like kind of historical critical method, you still have to wrestle with two profound miracles that are attested to in the memory of the earliest Christians that if you can say like, yeah, that happened, or that at least the people that witnessed it believed that happened at the very least, right? Then you would have a hard time not accepting the rest. And that's the feeding of the 5,000 and the resurrection. Because the feeding of the 5,000 and the resurrection are the only two miracles that's recorded in all four gospels, right? So that's in the when you're doing the historical critical method here, by like taking it down and saying like, what can we say reliably is from the earliest of the communities, that what did people believe and all these things? Those two things, historians say, like, you have to wrestle with these two things if you want to take this as a historical book, which it's protruding itself to be. Because some of the other things don't match. You could say that, well, these miracles happened in this book, and these miracles happened in this book. And so we're saying, well, this community remembered that, this community remembered that. But these two particular miracles are recorded in every book.
Yeah, and those other miracles are kind of like, this guy did this thing over here.
Right.
And then it could be like, yeah, did you hear that the guy did that thing?
Right.
Opposed to 5,000 people. All correct. There. It's like if you went to a basketball game and said, for some reason, all of our popcorn never ran out. I don't know how it happened. Yeah. And then everybody came home and told their wives, like, yeah, guess what happened? The popcorn didn't run out.
Yeah,
or so, in resurrection, too. If you think about it, he died in a public display.
He died. And then not only that.
And it's like suicide by cop or whatever.
Right.
Sorry, I know. So in a sense, that's what Jesus did. He's kind of like, hey. And then he dies publicly. Like if it was a, you know, an old West hanging where everybody went to.
Right.
And so it wasn't like Jesus got stabbed in an alley or like killed in the back room or something. And so everybody saw it. And then enough people saw him when he came back.
Right. And that's one of the other big things, too, because Paul talks about that, about the witnesses to the resurrection and those people who saw it. And he name drops, because Paul's a name dropper. And he says, go and talk to so-and-so, go and talk to so-and-so. You can verify. And these other people from these 500 other people from this community can also verify. So not only do you have the gospels themselves that are purporting history, declaring these two things, like this is what we witnessed and this is what we died for, then you also have the letters of St. Paul corroborating all of that and saying that this is why I do what I do, even though I never met that Jesus guy in person, right?
And the horse thing.
What's that?
Just the horse part.
Where he falls off the horse?
Yeah.
Well, that's not in script, but there's no horse.
Everybody sees it. Everybody watched the movie.
I thought you were thinking the Caravaggio painting.
Everything's from Paul falls off this horse.
Yes, yeah.
Get off your high horse.
He was stoned off his ass, actually.
Whoa!
But hello.
So, that's a joke. That's a play on words.
Yeah, it is a play on words.
Yeah. Stone means something different.
Yeah.
And ass means something different.
It does.
Now, if you said he was tripping balls, that's completely different.
Oh, whoa.
All right, so I don't know if that was helpful at all, but at least like what I'm trying to illustrate here is that there are certain things that whenever we look at the, like some of these things are old and some of these things it's hard to believe or whatever. You gotta first of all, what are the authors trying to purport? Are they trying to purport history or not? And if they are, like, are there any corroborating reports? Does anybody else agree with this, or is this just something crazy? Like, a good example of this is the flood stories, the Old Testament flood stories, right? Almost every ancient civilization has a flood story. Right. I've got to watch my time, or am I clicking?
No, you're
am I clicking?
I'm clicking. You're clicking.
Almost every ancient civilization has a flood story, right? There's something stuck in the human psyche that remembers a flood. Now, it may have happened this way, it may have happened that way, it doesn't matter. It was all interpreted as an act of God, right? And so this is the thing that we do is like we say, okay, well, I can believe that. I can believe that there was a flood and that people interpreted it as an act of God, right? So what do we now do with these other stories that have that are much newer than the flood story and that have so much more corroboration that are harder to believe? The resurrection, the feeding of the 5,000, the person of Jesus. The only in modern scholarship, like in those who are either in a historical critical method or whatever that want to reject the person of Christ and his works, that moves into the realm of like saying that Jesus actually never existed as a person. So that's like the new modern kind of like scholarship, like, oh, this is all just Paul made this up or whatever, because Paul's writings are some of the earliest writings of the New Testament. But also, I think that's because a lot of people give a bad date to Matthew, Mark, and Luke. But that's neither here nor there. It's for a different show.
Bad dates.
Bad dates. Anyway, what does that does that is that helpful at all, or where does that spin your wheels?
Two things that spun my wheels. Just you saying genres, mm-hmm. that sort of opened my eyes to understanding, like, that's it's a genre, like it's mm-hmm. a genre of reading, like of folklore or whatever. And then also when you said just it's an act, the act of God, the acts of God, like just the flood, or it's helping me understand, like, those are people that saw things that were, well, I guess the miracles that were happening. So it opened my eyes a bit, actually, because it really helped me realize, like, how powerful those miracles can be for people. Like, and then, so if I were to experiencing it now or whatever, and I'd want to write all my experiences down, then if people believe in it so much, then that can only be a great thing, because everyone believes in it. I mean, so I'm beginning to see the light in that sense, because it's creating community, it's creating things that are essential for people's well-being.
Well, and because me as a cynic, I'll push back on that idea a little bit, because creating community and gathering people around, that I don't think is a good reason to believe in something, because that's Nazism as well, right? You could say the same. Oh, the
it's like a cult.
Yeah, Hitler got together and he gave people encouragement, and they were all able to gather together and form community and a national identity, which was really healthy for them at the time. No, that's my whole thing, and I think the only reason why something is worth believing is whether or not it's true. Right, that was my struggle as a kid. And my struggle as a kid was like, this sounds fairy tale-ish, because I know fairy tales and I think they're crap. Right, I hated fiction as a kid. It's only as an
which old, is funny because he just praised fiction.
I know, as an old man, I'm getting old into man. Fiction. Yeah, and so like this is I'm so far behind on this kind of stuff. But I hated it as a kid because I hated being lied to. Right, and so to me, the only reason why anything should have belief value is whether or not it's true, right? That to me is better than the fruits that come from it, right? Because let's imagine.
Oh, sorry, keep going.
Well, let's imagine Hitler won and he made the entire world in his image, and there was peace and harmony with blonde haired, blue eyed people and every continent moving forward.
Which is in his image.
I know, but true. But,
no,
but,
I know. Sorry.
But
I was doing literal verses.
From their perspective, they would be like, oh, this was a good thing because now, you know, but in reality, no, it's not. That's genocide, right? You know, because like we're all alive and we're healthy and this is how we live, and we abort every baby that's going to be born different, right? That's for that, that's Brave New World, right? That's the book, right? That's the whole thing was they convinced the society that this is what's best and this is what's good, but it wasn't what's true, right? Because that's not true that your race is somehow superior to the other races and all these things. Anyway, continue.
Yeah, no, so I mean, so I'm with you with that. I mean, because the only way my own play has been able to have any traction within the mental health world is because it is completely true. Mm. Like, it, you know, well, most of it is completely true,
but
it's from my heart. Like a lot of the things that happen in the play are true, and those things are things that people relate to.
Yes.
So is that what you're saying? Like,
yeah.
when people relate to these stories and these genres. And not just
relating to the story. That's what's great about fiction, is because fiction can take a what you might would say like literal truth and apply it universally. That's what's beautiful about fiction. Go ahead.
Is this all kind of dovetailing, or not dovetailing, going back to what we were talking about in the beginning of this conversation?
It kinda is.
Because if you think about it, we're also going back to this early Genesis stuff, where we're kind of saying it's more folklore-y stories, right? But what's the point of these folklore stories is that there's a point to these stories.
Right.
There's a point to the Tower of Babel. Did they really build the tower? Did they really all of a sudden speak different languages all of a sudden? Well, probably not. But the fact is, there's a moral to the story of not trying to get to heaven or to put yourself where God or
what. So the story,
not literally get to heaven. Come on.
So the problem with the problem.
Don't take too long.
All right. So that's not what the Tower of Babel is about. We'll do that. We'll do a different show on the Tower of Babel, but that's not the whole thing. Is a few chapters earlier, they were told to be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth, right? But rather than filling the earth, they went into one location, and rather than going out, they went up, Right. And so because this guy says, no, you need to go out and fill and subdue.
No, building a high rise because the price is real estate. That's exactly. I've been to Honolulu. Anyway, this is how it goes.
It was the point not holding to the covenant. So.
Okay.
You're wrong. Anyway, sorry. Continue. Yeah.
All right. So the point what I'm saying is it's meaning of the story. It's like Adam and Eve. It's meaning. There's a story. There's a meaning to the story. Because like I was saying before, my tough part with wrapping my head around some of this stuff is that we don't teach this right. You know, I try to do that to the confirmation kids where it's like these 11 chapters, we got to take it this way. Because also the Bible is not a textbook. It's not like your history book in college where you flip it open and stuff that you do a report on. And what were you saying about genres and stuff? Like, because you're looking at it and you have different books that are not supposed to be together. And we put them all together. So we're talking about Luke's gospel and Acts is like one book, which is more, like you said, like a history book or a timeline and stuff. And other things may be more poetic. And then you get to other stuff that's more all over the place. And then who's these written for? Like all the letters of Paul are written to somebody.
Or some community, yeah.
Some people, you know. The Thessalonians needed to hear X. That's why he wrote the letter. And the what's it called? The Romans needed to hear why. So he wrote that letter to them. So that letter to the Romans may not work with people of Macedonia or something for some reason.
Mm. Yeah,
or Corinth. Definitely. That was probably better. Yeah. To the Corinthians. So, which is right by Macedonia. So, but back to the point what I'm saying. So then you get this more folklore-y stuff in the beginning of the Bible, which I used to hate when they're like, this is the real deal right here. Because somehow God created night and day. On this day, and the next day, he created the sun and the moon.
Right,
and you're like, that's not how night and day and sun and moons work. You can't have night and day without the sun and the moon, or at least the sun. Yeah. But, you know, so you're like, that's bull. This doesn't work. And then when you have people teaching it in the wrong way, you start to doubt these things or whatnot.
Right. So, especially if we had talked about this before, is that like this is what's called a fundamentalism, the idea of kind of swinging really, really hard into the literal sense of scripture without discerning genre and then deciding that everything in scripture is historically and scientifically true, which scripture itself doesn't purport to say that kind of thing.
I see.
Yeah, my other one was Adam and Eve had two boys, and then one killed the other, and the one that killed the one went away and had kids with people from over there. Where do those people come from if there's only two people on the whole earth? Right. Well, then there's another group of people. We won't talk about that.
We won't talk about those.
It's like, wait, what? And then they have another kid, and he has kids. Where did he find those kids? Where did he find these ladies? Because there wasn't ladies earlier. There was only two people, equaling four, back to three, and now four again. And now there's ladies, and now they can multiply. So where'd they all come from? And we can't go back to the garden because of the cherubim.
Yes, with the flaming sword.
Sorry. I didn't follow that at all, but it's okay.
That's okay.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. Too fast. Yeah, it's all good.
There was a confirmation class that I went way too far.
Oh.
That nobody caught up on.
Oh.
Except for people that did, and they're like, ah.
Well, what's great about your show is that you make it accessible. Like all the things that you're talking about, it's accessible.
Yeah.
And that's what I love about it. And it's in conversation and
wrestling with things. And that's the idea.
Yeah. And I'm going to forever be obedient to my mom,
Right.
And there's, I don't think I have anything strong enough to actually leave the church. It's just all these thoughts. It's just thoughts that I'm having. And because I find such a home in the church. When I was studying in England, like the fact that I had no other family around, but I had the Catholic church to go to every Sunday was home to me. Right. So, but as I get older, I guess I just question more things.
Well, and rightfully so you should. And this is showing a growth and maturing in your faith. 'Cause for me, like, my feelings are so fickle, right? And I can feel palpably various times in my life the absence of God's presence, right? Like, because I remember like being so excited about prayer or being in communion with God or whatever, and I go through other valleys of my life where I'm like, God's so far away, you know, this is just all going through the motions kind of stuff. But what's if I were to follow my feelings in that, I would essentially abandoned my faith because I don't feel like it's valuable to me at this point, right? You know, I don't feel like there's any more that I could learn, or that's you know, the homilies at Mass suck, or the music is terrible, or whatever, you know, whatever it happens to be. And if I'm feeling absence from God, then why show up at all? For me, what grounds me in that is truth. You know, like there are So this is a little nerdy, but there are, have you ever heard of the term the transcendentals before? Okay.
Transcendentals.
So yes. The transcendentals for people at home is, it's one of the categories of Aristotle. So Aristotle helped us to understand, like, he broke down distinctions of being and existence and all these things in his metaphysics. And so he breaks down this idea of, like, the essence of a thing, like what a thing is, right? And then he breaks down the kind of the spatial properties of the things or the accidents of the things. So he had the nine categories of accidents and then the category of the essence, right? But what he, in making these distinctions, what he discovered is that there's an additional category of what he called these transcendentals that all of creation kind of shares into, regardless of whether it's small pebble or great man or whatever, right? And these things, these transcendentals become our pathways to God, because it's God who holds the transcendentals. If God is existence and creation, and he shares his existence and creation with others, then that kind of makes sense that this pagan philosopher would see an image, a stamp in all of this creation of something that corresponds through all of life. And those, like, reduction, like he had, like, I think six, but you can reduce them down to three: the true, the good, and the beautiful, right? Everything in creation shares in the transcendentals in some kind of way, in the true, and the good, and the beautiful. And my thing has always been attached to the true, like the intelligible, right? So when to the extent the thing is intelligible, it's reliable to me, right? I can understand, by intelligibility in philosophy, what we mean is, like, this table is made of wood today, right? And tomorrow it's also going to be made of wood. It's not all of a sudden jello, right? It's intelligible. It's discoverable. It has an integrity to it. It's knowable. I can understand it. I can research it. And that's what we mean by truth. It's the intelligibility of a thing, right? To me, that's what grounds me in my faith, because I'm such the guy that doesn't want to be lied to or doesn't want to be tricked or fooled, that I need to hold on to those little nuggets, right? For you, it might be something different here. You have the beautiful and the good. So the beautiful is like the wholeness, the integrity of a thing, right? I think this is one of those things that in the church, I think we would understand the church a whole lot better if we looked at her as a whole, when more often than not, we pull apart her parts. And then the analogy that I use is kind of it's kind of an unflattering analogy, but, you know, whenever you think of young men ogling a woman, right, they look at her various parts. They don't look at her as a whole. And oftentimes that's what we do when we look at the church. We're like, I don't like this about her, but I really like that. That's
I understand.
Yeah. Nah. the last is the goodness or the functionality or the usefulness. It does a thing. And so oftentimes, you know, people who are more pragmatic follow the good that leads them to, like, oh, there's a highest good. There's the greatest form of good in God versus truth. But those are the things that, like, I need something outside of myself to ground me in my faith, or else I'll never be grounded. I'm always going to be depending on maybe what I ate that day, you know, like C.S. Lewis had said, you know, or not even C.S. Lewis. That was Scrooge. That was Charles Dickens. It's like, there's more of
a lot of mustard.
Yeah. More of gravy than the grave of you. Right. Because, like,
which goes back to Bob Cratchit that we were talking about earlier.
Full circle.
Yeah. Right?
So, well, so this is,
you are an old potato. That's my Albert Finney. From the past Christmas Carol, Scrooge, 1971.
But this is the this is what, when we grow in faith, where we have to kind of ground it in something, because faith in myself is just believing in me, right? And I'm a selfish, broken sinner. And if I believed that everything that I ever did was right, then I would be a narcissist, right? And I would be a whole lot worse for it. Mm-hmm. If I believed in myself, right? So if I'm going to ground myself in a belief, in a faith, it needs to come from outside. I need to grab something that is true, or maybe it's beautiful, or maybe it's good, and chase it all the way down to the end till I find out what's at the end of that thing. And that thing needs to be the one thing that might make my life about. And it grounds me in my faith. And so whatever happens in the whirlwind of my emotions, of my life, or whatever I had for dinner, you know, doesn't affect me. I might feel like, oh, this is terrible. I don't like this. I don't like that. But if it's true for me, that's where I'm going to always go back to, right? Then I deal with what's bad and I try to fix what I can, right? You know, I try to repair from the inside, so to speak. You know, I don't know. I'm just ranting at this point. Where are we going?
You lost me a long time ago.
No, what was ringing true for me in what you were just talking about is how much you know about what you know, what you've read, what you've studied. And the only thing that, I'm trying to like think to myself, like, what have I ever learned that much about because I was so interested in wanting to learn about it? And for me, embarrassingly enough, is MTV's The Real World. I used to read those books, like the books that the casting directors would make about the show, and they would include the applications. So I would find out the truth of these characters that were on this documentary soap opera that they would call it back in the day before reality television.
Documentary soap opera. That's awesome. Yeah. I didn't even know they called it that.
Yeah, because the two creators, one worked in documentaries and the other one worked in soap operas.
So that's how they created. That's interesting.
Yeah. And so the first four seasons of The Real World, they didn't have jobs that they gave them. They just were themselves. And I was so fascinated. What was that?
Just like hanging on the house, right?
Yeah. And I was just so fascinated by how, out of all these people that have applied for the show, like, why these seven people?
Yeah.
And I know a lot about it. So that's where I'm relating to you. And I want that to be my church. I don't want MTV to be my church. I just want where I'm going to church. Yeah. I'm interested now. I'm just being here and I knew that was going to happen to me. Because how much you care about it, both of you do, about what you care about, from maps to
Jesus. They're on the same level.
Maps to Jesus. This is my map to Jesus. Like, yeah, this is literally exactly my map to Jesus.
That's what this episode's going to be called, Maps to Jesus.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Now I got to get you a picture of Thomas Guy.
Yeah. Because like, that's the truth for me. Those accounts of those characters, those people, real life people that they were totally messing with and editing to make a show. It, in a way, the basis of my life has always been about people. I mean, that's what acting is about, right? Like, I study people on the daily to make creative work that is relatable and enticing so that you'd want to think differently about your life because that's what art is about or whatever. So just by you explaining the genres and then the transcendentals, like, that's really powerful thoughts, like, and those are powerful educational things that I am embracing now. And I'm starting to, and if anything, it kept my mom sane through all the insane things that I have put her through. Like, and that's powerful that this faith can provide that for my mom.
Oh, for real. Cause like, sorry, cut this out. No, but for real, like, I remember talking with our friend Sheena about stuff like that, where she worked in the psychiatric field and stuff before. And I was just like, I don't know how people get through life without like a prayer life or a God to talk to, or, you know, something to bounce ideas off of or something like that sometimes. Cause it's like, even if God's not real, it's really helpful per se, that it's like the hardest times in my life, I talk to this nothingness, in a sense, if you're looking at it on an outside view, and boy, did it help. So if it's the fact is, like, if I don't believe that it's there, then I'm literally talking to myself, or, you know, opposed to going to talk to a guy on a couch. Well, I'll be on the couch and he'll be sitting there with a pencil and doodling, saying, and then tell me about your mother. And then I'll be like, oh boy, how long do you have? And I think she even said something about on how, like, sometimes people have suggested, like, have you ever thought of, like, religion or something, or, like, faith-based things to get through things? Because, like, honestly, if there wasn't that, because I just, like, that's the point. Like, cause it's really hard to put into words, right? Like, I've the hard times, like when my grandmother died, or when I had like breakups in high school or something, it's like you sit there and you talk to God and then you're like just spilling your guts. And sometimes you just need to do that. That's why people see therapists sometimes, even if the therapist doesn't help you, it's the fact that you're literally saying that. That's why you also need your person, in air quotes, you know, to vent to and stuff like that. And you need that other person who's not your spouse so you can vent about your spouse. And which I told Lisa she needs so she can complain about me. But
that's my wife, by the way.
Yeah, I know. Which is tough because your wife loves me. But so my point, what I'm saying saying is it's like there's that, but then what's funny is that like is your prayer life also.
Yeah.
And what's weird is sometimes when you're like, all these bad things, I need to say this out into the ether, into the universe. But yet sometimes we get answers back.
Right. That's like the mystery of the Psalms. Like if you ever read even the Psalms of Lament, right? They talk about how terrible life is and how crazy things are. And God, you have abandoned me. And where are you? And my enemies are I can number all my bones. All these things, right, that the psalmists say. But every single psalm, with the exception of one, ends, yeah, ends with an exaltation. Lord, you are so good. Lord, you are holy. You are perfect. You are near me. You are near to the brokenhearted, right? So it's that inexplicable experience of Job, right? He loses everything and he cries out, God, where are you? God, why are you punishing me? All these things. Then he has an encounter with God. And at the end of it, it doesn't make any sense to us, but he's satisfied, right? There's something that met that encounter, right? And what to your point, Neil, is that like that's the whole like even modern philosophy, like Kierkegaard, that's the leap of faith. He says that this life has no meaning outside of the meaning of faith. And Tolstoy has his confessions that the only way to stay alive in this life is to have faith. Otherwise, it's meaningless and it's just paper and all that stuff. There's something that the human person needs to know that God is. We seek it out, and it breaks us if we don't find him, right? If we can't reconcile that. There's something inside us that says, this is all useless and meaningless and a waste, and it's terrible. But if we are able to chase down that thing, that's what I'm saying, like finding that thing that leads ultimately to the ultimate thing. That's why I always point to the transcendentals, because it's who they lead to. That might help... move you forward in your faith life from feeling blown in the wind to being like, I can say that this is true about my faith versus not 100% sure where you are in your faith. I think the book that I would recommend to start with, because it does kind of focus in on the human person. Are you a book reader? Do you like reading books? Never mind.
Yeah, don't do that. Yeah.
There's an audiobook.
Yeah, I'll take the recommendation.
Great, an audiobook. Yeah.
He's bought me like 72 books.
I've bought him so many.
And really? I have a whole shelf full of dust.
That's so cool.
So there's an audiobook by a guy named C.S. Lewis, and the book is called Mere Christianity. And even just the
opening. Mere Christianity?
M-E-R-E. Mere Christianity. Okay. And at the very beginning of the book, he does this great examination of the human person and the human psyche. And
is this the writer of Alice in Wonderland, C.S. Lewis?
No,
that's
Narnia.
A different guy. Narnia wrote, C.S. Lewis wrote Narnia.
Lewis Carroll.
Okay,
thank you.
Yeah. You're doing Lion, the Witch, and Wardrobe.
Okay, yeah. So this is Lion, the Witch, and Wardrobe person.
This is Lion, the Witch, and Wardrobe
person. He's very Catholic.
He was not Catholic.
No, but he has...
He has very Catholic tendencies.
Sorry.
But he was not Catholic.
J.R.R. Tolkien was Catholic.
Tolkien was Catholic. Oh. But they're both like, they were both great thinkers of the times and also fiction writers, in addition to a bunch of other apologetics and things like that that they wrote. But Mere Christianity is a fantastic book, because what he does in it is he tries to make a rational case for Christianity and how and the grounding of your faith. Mm-hmm. And that was I think that might be a good book to kind of, since you have had this focused on persons and empathy, he does that so, so well at the beginning of that book. And it might give you something to say like, okay, I can see this inside of a person, and maybe that can help bring some grounding, something like an anchor to hold on to your faith whenever it doesn't feel right, whenever it doesn't feel like... doesn't feel like that's where you're at.
Yeah. That'd be good.
Yeah, just give it a shot. It's free, I think, on YouTube.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
The audiobook of Mere Christianity? Yeah. Nice. Yeah. Cool.
I don't know what he's doing.
I don't either.
Neil's on his phone. I'm waiting for you to tell me stuff.
Oh. Mere Christianity.
Yeah. Mere's Christianity, Alice through the Looking Glass. It all works out.
Alice through the Looking Glass.
Well, cheers to finally getting together.
Yes.
Yeah, you know what? I would have loved to get together with you just on a personal note.
Yeah, please. Let's do.
Yeah. All right.
So, no, but that's good. But wait, do we even break down your problems with the church or no?
No, we went more fundamental. It was faith more.
Well, but that's the thing, too, because originally when you were talking to me, I think when we were talking after Mass one time or something, and I felt like it was like you were having not a crisis of faith, but like trouble, beliefs or faith or like my relationship with Christ, God or something. So I was like, oh, okay, that's good. We can get on and talk about it because, you know, I have my own problems, too. And like one thing that's funny is on the last retreat where I did a talk, which was like Jesus and me. And I was telling the kids on how you need to trust in God and stuff like that. But the part I didn't put at the end, which I should have, but I thought I was running long because I thought I got the I thought I got the cue to wrap it up, but I didn't. Oh. So I was like, all right, and let me hammer home all the points David wants to make before I finish. Was one of the things is, it's like, you know, my relationship with Jesus is not the best right now. I do not have a very good prayer life right now. And the problem, too, is whenever I have a bad prayer life or I have very little communication with God, the time I do have the best is right after communion. And now right. that I have children, that is flush on the toilet. Yeah. It's like I literally get no time where I could just love that. And it's like when we went to Anaheim and we went to I only went to like two masses or maybe three. Unlike Dylan, who had to go to like eight. They made him go to. But when we went to Anaheim for the retreats or for the Congress and we went to several masses. So it's like, oh, wow, I can go to mass and I can receive communion. And I have this time where I'm not doing anything else. I can literally pray. So that's my best time that I can have. But. So just right now, it's just like my prayer life's pretty crap. So I just want to say, like, that's one thing I wanted to kind of push towards the teenagers or the confirmandi was the fact that, like, here I told the story of my life and I told my ups and my downs with God. And I told on how I totally trusted him and how all these great things have happened and how, like, that's in the past. But even now as an adult, I have problems with X, Y, and Z. So it's a continuous
right.
thing.
That is the struggle of faith.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's that. Mm-hmm. I am also that person that goes like, hey, I went to David's going away mass, which was a daily mass. And then I went to Angel's wedding and that's a wedding. I really don't need to go 3 days in a row to church, do I? And then Lisa goes, yes, you do. You need to go on Sunday. I said, I know I need to go on Sunday. I know those don't count, but I just don't want to go. So I don't know. But, you know, what we were talking about before of, you know, church stuff, people in charge and gender related things. And I know, like, one thing I hated was when people were like, I'm not happy what this priest did or what this parish did, so I'm gonna go to Central Christian,
right?
And I'm not gonna be Catholic anymore.
That's the first opposed disillusionment to. In the church, like, or the first disillusionment in the spiritual life. So as we grow in the spiritual life, this is just kind of like patterns of faith and things like that. The first, we go through three major disillusionments, and the first one is with the church, because the church is, she might be the spotless bride of Christ, but she's full of a bunch of sinners. And like I always say, even on my best days, I'm not a great representative of Jesus, right? And so that's what all the church is made up of. And so whenever we start growing in the spiritual life, and you're like, Jesus or God, this is your church. This is what you want to convince me is where holiness, where you are to be found. No, it's the hardest part to get over, actually. Because if we can jump the hurdle and submit to the yes, that God established this particular church, and this is where God is found, and it's messy, but this is your family. If we can get to that point and move and come to love and accept the church as she is, and contributes to her her beauty rather than just complaining about her, because oftentimes that's much easier for us to do.
Very easy.
Yeah. You've listened to the show, right? Mm-hmm. Then
you haven't listened to the outtakes.
then you can move forward and deeper into spiritual life and love and trust of the church, and you can see her for her full beauty of who she is. Yeah. But that's that hardest hurdle, is that disillusionment with the church, because she is not as we think the bride of Christ ought to be.
Yeah, it's going to be a continuous.
Oh, absolutely.
Right, a continuous. Yes. Struggle. But I also don't think that this moment in time, like this shared moment between the three of us, yeah. like has gone unnoticed. Like it's something that I noticed to be quite enlightening. Like because I see how much you both care about what it is that you're talking about. I don't know if that makes any sense. But
no, it totally does.
Yeah. Yeah, and I like that. I mean, it's rubbed off on me. So
cool.
Yeah. So I want to listen more, and I'll read more, and I'll just make more sense of why I go to church every Sunday.
Yeah.
And sometimes I think that's another thing too, is I feel like a lot of problems people might have with the church or, you know, faith or something might be out of ignorance, mm-hmm. you know,
definitely.
Because more you'll see a lot of stuff where people are like, you know, you Catholics are dumb because of X, Y, Z. And it's like, well, actually that's not the way it goes. It's more this way. And it's like, oh, really?
Yeah.
Who is it to I was talking to?
I don't know.
There's friends of ours. I love it too.
You can't name drop, remember?
Well, here's the problem too, is I do a lot of name dropping, and then most people will go, who's that? It doesn't matter. Yeah. And then other people are like, oh my God, I can't believe he totally put us out there. But there's like some people who sit there and said, oh, this guy wasn't very into the church, But then I found this and these apologetics that were this and this. And then I shared it with that guy. And then now he's the hardcore Catholic guy.
Oh, wow.
You know, and it's like all these things that he hated about the Catholic Church. And then once I like found somebody right. who knew the answers or, you know, the real meaning.
Yeah.
And now he's the one who's like, oh, I guess we're going to go with this.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. That's that whole.
In their little friend group. He was like, once I got this guy involved.
Yeah. Who was that said that? Fulton Sheen. Like, there's not.
I said, we're not going to name any names.
Archbishop Fulton Sheen is dead, so we can name him.
Whoa.
So he.
Yeah, you can just call people names without putting Archbishop in front.
He had said that there's not 1,000 people in the world who. Reject the church for who she is, but there are millions who reject her for who they think she is.
Yeah, right? Ooh, that's good.
Yeah, that's
I haven't heard that yet.
Oh yeah,
even from you.
Go. I know.
See, and I hang out with you a lot.
You do hang out with me a lot. He doesn't listen. Is the problem?
Oh, he's like he hears, but he doesn't listen.
But he who has ears. Wow. Yeah. So that's
I'm starting to feel that, dude. You want some lemon juice, buddy?
Sorry. No, that's yeah. It's That's I think that's where we're all at. And so, like, I hope that, to me, like, Neil and I talk about how moments and events and things like that are, don't make up the Christian life, right? Because that's a lot of our harping things. Like, people think that you go to this retreat and it's going to change your life, or you go to this conference and it's going to be the best thing ever. And there's something to say about those things, but they are... God seems to be doing something different in the modern world with these things. And these little moments, they can be a Pentecost moment. You know, because Pentecost was an event. It was a moment, right? You know, it can be a...
one moment
It can be one time. Moment in time.
Where more fires you thought came be. And made yeah. tongues. I understood everything they said, yeah. even though I didn't know the words.
Yes, that's exactly how.
One moment,
but the whole thing is, it's got to. We've got to carry it beyond just the moment. And that's the thing that Neil and I have been really wrestling with how ministry is growing and developing, is that we can't be relying on just these standalone events and these things like that, where a real relationship is what's involved, which is why it's great that you're here. And you're like, we know each other, right? This is not just like, oh, let's go ahead and have this great feel good experience and then walk away from Chris forever. You know, that's not the thing. You know, that's
even though some of the retreats I put on did change people's lives.
Only because Neil was there, and he is the Lord and Savior. You must genuflect in his presence.
Okay, real quick. Yes. There was a skit where they made fun of me calling me the Messiah of Search, but yes.
Oh, that's funny. That's funny. All right, so we're 2 hours in, and I got to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Jeez.
So, Chris, tell us where people can find you and what's going on exciting. Can anybody actually see your show, or do you have to be invited to the conferences? Ben?
Yeah, there's nothing coming up in the moment. So, but you can follow us, Stand the Play. So at Stand the Play on Instagram, and then standtheplay.org is our website. And then for me, if you want to follow me, Instagram is probably the best, at the Christopher Aguilar.
The Christopher Aguilar.
Yeah, the Christopher
That's
Aguilar.
That's how cool he is.
That
is
T-H-E. Cool. Christopher yeah. Aguilar.
The
Bart. The.
The. That die, Bart, die.
No, it's German.
The Bart, D. Yeah. Now I need you to sing the whole HMS Pinafore so you don't kill me.
Yeah. Nobody can speak German.
Sorry, we went. That's more
that
Simpsons.
Was really deep Simpsons okay. cut. Sorry, oh,
okay. It's all Sideshow Bob. And then we went into a Gilbert and Sullivan riff where they sang the Three Little Maids from School Are We.
Three little maids from school are we, pretty schoolgirl well can be, filled to the brim with girlish glee, three little girls from school.
Yeah. Oh, and then of course, TCAST, my podcast,
T-Cast,
the Christopher
right.
Aguilar Show.
Who's on hiatus right now.
Who's on hiatus, back. Yeah. I'll be back. I actually just did one about a couple that owns a jewelry business, and I ran into them at a Starbucks, and now I interview them for my podcast.
Do you want to say their names or something? Do you think?
Brimstone Jewelry, but that'll be on my podcast. So
Brimstone Jewelry, don't worry. Now owes $100 for the sponsorship.
Tens of listeners, Brimstone Jewelry.
Yeah. Hey, don't say their name too many times. They're gonna owe us money.
I know. Don't worry. I know. Hey, other jewelry places that I bought engagement/wedding rings from, you can pay money too.
But I want to say a special thanks to you both for just taking the time to listen and to talk with me today. And I'm really happy that I got to be on your podcast.
We didn't know. I had no idea. Apparently, Neil knew it was going to be super deep. That we were
because I talked to him. I care about people, David.
Well, I care about. I was just like, yeah, come on the show. And then I was like, holy crap, I don't know what we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
Don't worry, I'm lining up guests. I got stuff to talk about. Chris, if you want to come back and talk about like 1980s Disney movies, we can do that too.
Oh, geez. Yeah, we should put them through the ringer of The Simpsons and then talk about that.
No, but if I do come back, I definitely know what I would love to also talk about too.
Yeah.
So that would be really, because we were talking about like ignorance and I think a lot of like the community, I don't want to get into it. It'll open up a whole new can of worms. So,
Or do we want to let them wait? Like, here's the tease.
This is the teaser already. People are trying to guess.
No, but we can talk about that too because I have problems with community. Those people are jerks.
People suck.
That's the community,
right.
Like, not like the TV
show. Oh, at church? What? Oh, no. I love community the TV show. No, that's
community TV show. No, I didn't want to name the community at the moment just because I just want to open that up. But it just,
I meant the community church. No, I'm just kidding. No. I love the community. They can't be jerks. No, but like how you were talking about with the priest. And the priest's like, I'm cool, but everybody else might not be. And I think that's another problem with the church is the people. Because in a sense, the church is going to love you for who you are. Mm. Christ will love you for who you are. Mm. Some people might not love you for who you are.
Yeah.
And they need to know that. They need to know that before they cast too much judgment. Because they will see only the outside. They will only see the dress and not the person.
Mm.
That was so deep. I didn't mean to say that.
So good.
But like... Yeah. And that's the thing. And maybe if they got to know you, they might love you, but they won't get past that point.
Yeah.
And I will say, I think you look good in a dress. Don't worry.
Thank you.
Mike and Molly.
Mike and Molly.
That's what it was.
Watch that. It's a TV show.
That was him. Mike and Molly was a TV show, and he was in that as an adult.
I played a transgender girl, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. We'll show you that clip after we end this.
Yeah, it was pretty good. Yeah. It was good.
Cool. All right, Neil, you want to take us out?
Everybody follow us on the Insta. And if you want, our metal shows will be on every third week of November. So, but I'm sorry for Among Wolves, the band, because apparently you don't have a Facebook page because they tagged us. And then I looked for you to say, oh, you met these guys, but no, it didn't work.
Because we took the name.
Yeah, take that back.
We're the first Among Wolves.
I don't know if that works.
I don't know either.
It's like first among equals.
First among equals.
I thought. Roman consort or whatever. Yes. So hit us up. Listen to Chris's podcast when it comes back. Watch his show when he does it. If not, whatever. Send us feedback. Terry Love, I hope you enjoyed watching Jaws. And what else do we want to say? We'll have more episodes coming up. Someday we'll have Manny on and we can talk about Disney.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
Okay.
Chris, you want to come on and listen to talk about Hunchback of Notre Dame from 1996?
I want to talk about the one with Maureen O'Hara, the 1939 version, because I love that actress.
Oh, I do love Maureen O'Hara.
She's the one from Parent Trap, right?
Yes, she was in Parent Trap and The Quiet Man.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
So she was in Hunchback. She played Esmeralda.
Is that the Charles Lawton one, is it?
I don't know. I don't have a name of that.
This is totally not working with our Hey, Hey, Hey.
Oh, no, it's in there already. You guys don't know.
I love Maureen O'Hara. He's like, I already ended this show. I've been playing the music under you guys because you guys won't shut up. All right, whatever. We'll talk about whatever. Amen. Bye.
Now, light our darkest hour.